Good morning. This is hour number two of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for our program, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, Henry Frayne, is at the controls this morning. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics every week. If you'd like to look at our schedule, review the archive where we have past interviews there that you can listen to anytime you like, we have you can sign up for to get on to the regular thing there where you can get a podcast, where you can get onto the program that way. Any and all that's available on our website. Just go to WILL, go to will.illinois.edu, and it will give you all the information that you need. Well, from time to time here on the program, one of the things we like to do is to talk about books, to exchange tips on things that we have read, that we have liked. And occasionally we have guests here on the program that come in and make recommendations, and we tell people who are listening, well, you can call in and make your recommendations. And when we do these shows, they're generally wide open. We say whatever you want to talk about, any kind of book. And we wanted to do a book show here, have some book talk, and it had been a while since we'd done one of these programs. And this time around, we thought we'd do something, well, a little bit different, in the sense that we thought we'd focus on a particular category of fiction. And what we will be talking about here this morning is mystery, crime, and suspense writing. Certainly one of the most popular kinds of genres out there, and certainly something where there is a very wide range of kind of story, wide range of writer, range of character, so that many different tastes can be satisfied. And we'll be talking here this morning in this hour with Sarah Weinman, who certainly does a lot of reading and writing about this kind of fiction. She is the crime fiction columnist for the Baltimore Sun and also writes Dark Passages. That's a monthly online mystery and suspense column for the Los Angeles Times Book Review. She's done reviews and articles that have appeared in many print and web publications, including the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, Time Out New York, Newsday, the Globe and Mail, and others. I won't mention them all. She's also published short fiction herself, and that can be found in some of the major online and print crime fiction periodicals. She's appeared in, or will, in Dublin Noir, Baltimore Noir, Damn Near Dead, Expletive Deleted, and a collection called A Hell of a Woman, an anthology of female noir. She also has a blog, Confessions of an Idiosyncratic Mind, and that's available on the web. And she's joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, of course, questions are welcome. And what we would encourage people to do as well is call in and tell us about what you like about crime fiction and mystery stories. Maybe there's a particular author that you like, that you'd like to recommend, or maybe you've just read something recently you thought that it was really good and you'd like to call in and tell other people about it. You can do that too. Any and all of that's fine. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So 333-9455 is the number for folks who are here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are. We do also, again, have that toll-free line. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. And the call's on us. That is 800-222-9455. At any point here, you can pick up the telephone, give us a call, and join in the conversation. Ms. Weinman, hello.
Hi there.
Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, we appreciate you giving some of the time. This is a terribly lame question to start out with, but I'm going to do it anyway. Why do you think it is that mystery stories, crime fiction, is as popular as it is? What is it that people are looking for when they read these books?
Well, I think it's a number of things. First of all, you've even said it yourself, they're stories. They have plot, they have character. A lot of them have very interesting settings, be it set right here in the United States of America or all around the world. There's a growing trend of international crime fiction. And what they can do is highlight not only the particular, say, state of a character, but also the state of a particular city or setting and the like. They also, depending on the style, they can bring up a certain topic. There's a whole subset of mystery fiction that generally tend to be called cozy mysteries. And even within those cozies, you have mysteries that concentrate on certain topics, be it knitting, crocheting, bookbinding, I mean, you name it. There's probably a mystery series devoted to it. And it's, I think also, ultimately, many mystery stories, crime fiction, suspense, it starts off with things in chaos, things in disorder, and over the course of that book, order is reached. So it's the idea of going from a, you know, a case of, I'm sorry, I'm blanking out here, but where things are in disarray.
Yeah.
And they move towards being less so, and then there's order reached. So I think it's sort of a calming effect that's in place, and people, many mystery readers, are satisfied as a result. Now, conversely, there's also noir fiction, which does the reverse. And for certain subsets of crime fiction readers, they prefer that. So ultimately, mystery fiction is a wide category that appeals to as many people or as few people as it wants to.
Yeah.
And I think that's the great appeal, is that it's so widespread.
Yeah, I think that certainly you can find some of the most endearingly oddball characters maybe in all of fiction. And to me, I think that is the kind of thing that appeals to me. Unusual characters, myself, I guess my taste does kind of run to the noir and the sort of iconic lone wolf detective person who is trying to make their way in a world that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, where there is a lot of disorder, and it seems that no matter what that person tries to do, that there, it says that there is so much disorder that one person isn't going to be able to do anything about it. So maybe the best you can do is try to do the best you can do.
That's exactly it. The kind of stories you're describing have their basis, especially in America, with Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett, those lone wolf detectives who are sort of crusading and trying to dig beneath the underbelly of a certain society and uncover the skeletons in the closet, so to speak. But that's exactly what I think you're getting at here.
Yeah, and the other thing I think for me, an exotic locale. That's a good thing, and it can make things a lot more fun. I really enjoy reading Asian crime fiction.
Very interesting. Yes,
there seems to be more and more of it. Either novels that have been actually written in English but are set in Asia, and I think that we're starting to see some more. I guess for some time now there has been, for example, there have been fiction that was originally written in Japanese that's available in English translation. I'm not sure, you know, how much more fiction that is actually maybe that was not originally written in English is becoming available, but it seems that segment, was we have a lot of stories that are set in China. There are stories that are set in Japan. We may be seeing more Indian crime fiction, other places. And just a couple of months ago, I read a novel that I thought was particularly, it was pretty good. It was written by a man named James Church, about a police inspector in North Korea.
Yes, so, those are very excellent mysteries. And I think what's fascinating about Church, he's a pseudonymous author. He doesn't want to reveal who he is because he's still connected with the intelligence, I understand. But the Inspector O novels, what is fascinating about them is not so much the mystery element, but the fact that he's always up against bureaucracy who are trying to impede his investigation. In fact, the last book, I think it was Hidden Moon, the entire trajectory of that story was that no one was going to tell him anything. No one would give him enough information, and he had to sort of butt heads and come up against stone walls. And that was where the fascination lay. Now, just to get back a little bit, you're absolutely right. There has been this sort of mini explosion, not just in terms of mystery set in Asia, but mystery set in exotic locales, many of them in translation. Now, I think there is sort of, it's part of, I think, an overall slight increase in the number of works available in translation. But I think for crime fiction in translation, what the appeal is that it's so exotic. It's so outside of what we in America are used to. There's also this, especially in mysteries not only set in Japan or Asia, but also in Europe, Scandinavia especially, there's been this great boom.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're seeing is this sort of this great social and psychological element where crime fiction is not just about a great plot and great characters, but also illuminating what's going on in that society. And from an Asian standpoint, granted, these are not in translation, but there's John Burdett's Thailand set thrillers, Bangkok Aid, Bangkok Tattoo, and Bangkok Haunts. And what's interesting about those books is that, yeah, there's a crime fiction investigation, but you have it from the vantage point of a Thai police detective with a hint of either the supernatural or Eastern philosophy and a very sort of arch voice. And that is the main appeal of those books, alongside with the actual investigation. We're opening up windows into cultures we might never have been exposed with.
Yeah, I thought those books were hugely entertaining. I enjoyed them a lot. When I first read Bangkok Aid, it just knocked me out. Whether you really are getting a window into another society, you know, I don't know. I sort of have that same feeling when I read something like Tony Hillerman, read through all of those books that were also really entertaining, and you got the feeling that maybe you got at least a little, you know, it opened the window a little bit onto a very different kind of culture and a different kind of society. And that's, I think, one of the great things about mystery writing is that it lends itself to that. It seems to be a very flexible kind of form, and there are a lot of things that you can do with it.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, too, is that the common knock against mystery fiction being genre is that it's quote-unquote formula. But if anything, mystery fiction can be compared to a type of musical format, be it a sonata or a symphony, where there are clear parameters being followed, but a symphony by Mozart and a symphony by random person is going to sound completely different. The same applies for genre fiction, of crime fiction of any stripe. What the author, what the writer brings to the table, be it a voice, be it narrative style, be it plotting, be it character, be it syntax, be it all of those things sort of tossed in a cauldron, and what comes out is that book. And so you're taking constraints, but the end result could be completely different depending on how they're used.
Our guest in this hour is Sarah Weinman. She's a freelance writer based in New York. She is the Baltimore Sun's crime fiction columnist. She also writes Dark Passages. That's a monthly online mystery and suspense column for the LA Times Book Review. She's done many reviews and articles. They have appeared widely in print and on the web. She is a writer herself. Her short fiction can be found in many of the major online and print crime fiction periodicals. She also has a blog, Confessions of an Idiosyncratic Mind. And we're talking here about crime and mystery fiction this morning. If you have questions, comments, maybe something you'd like to recommend, that's great. Give us a call, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with somebody in the community of Belgium, not all that far away from us. Line 4, hello.
Yes, hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through this book. It's by PBS's own Scott Simon, and it's called Windy City.
And
I don't know if you could, if it would be just a mystery. On the spine, it says F for fiction, but it's a very entertaining book, and I just want to plug the book because he's on PBS.
Well, thank you. I haven't had a chance to read it, but I have heard very, very good things about Simon's work. And I think, actually, you bring up a point, which is that crime and mystery fiction, especially in terms of how it's classified in the bookstore or in trade publications, they can either be thought of as actual category mysteries, or they expand beyond it and are then classified as fiction.
Okay.
I think in Simon's case, he sort of straddled the line that he uses mystery elements, but I think ultimately his books are generally fiction.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, thanks for the call.
You're very welcome.
And I guess that does suggest that there is something about this genre that's the dividing lines are a little blurry, and that there is, you can verge into all kinds of areas, various kinds of suspense and horror and gothic and science fiction. I suppose there are things, science fiction novels, that are kind of noirish mysteries. And I don't know. I was wondering the other day, has someone ever written a classic noirish detective story that was set in the Old West? Does such a thing exist?
I'm not sure if it's noirish per se, but there is a mystery series being written that's set in the Old West that actually takes some of its cues from Sherlock Holmes and mysteries of that ilk, and that's by Steve Hawkinsmith. The first book was called Homes on the Range, and there's been two subsequent, On the Wrong Track and The Black Dove. And they feature two brothers, Big Red and Old Red Amlingmeyer, who traveled the Old West, and Otto, I think it's Old Red, he is a huge Sherlock Holmes fan, and he constantly gets his brother to read the stories, and he wants to be like his hero. So those books sort of emulate the Holmes style, but I know that The Black Dove also was getting a little bit darker as a result. But those mysteries are just, they're pure entertainment, and they're pure delight, and I love reading them, and I look forward to Hawkins Smith's next one. In terms of Westerns, I know that there is an actual, that subgenre still exists. It may not be thriving quite to the extent that it once did, but there are a number of crime writers who sort of cross over between Westerns and crime fiction. I'm thinking of people like Ed Gorman, who's a prolific writer and a prolific editor anthologist, and he writes a number of Westerns, as does Robert Randese, who's known for founding the Private Eye Writers of America and writing many crime novels, but he also, I believe, has a series of Westerns that's run at least, you know, well over 100 books. So there is sort of this blurring, I suppose. There was also a writer named Scott Phillips. His first book was called The Ice Harvest, which is just such a great, nasty, sleazy noir, The Ice Harvest. It was also made into a movie. But his most recent book, Cottonwood, was set in the West, in like Wichita, Kansas, of the 1860s. And it uses a real-life case as its basis. And again, it's serious dark underbelly. Mm-hmm. So you can tell from my response, there is sort of this crossover. And I think it lends itself because the Westerns have this archetype of, you know, the lone wolf, say, coming into a community and trying to clean up this town, and this feeling of an outsider stuck in this very small town where he has to figure out what to do.
Yeah. It's almost felt confident that that such a thing would exist, or at least it seems like it, if it didn't exist, that it should. I haven't done reading of Western fiction, but as you say, I think that this was something that could lend itself to that kind of story and that kind of storytelling really, really well. Well, let's talk with somebody else here. We have a caller, and Mackinac in Tazewell County. This is line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hi there. I am so delighted to be able to tell somebody about this book because I loved it, and nobody else seems to have heard about it.
Which book is that?
Okay, and what is it?
It's called The Hitman. The Hitman, and it's by Lawrence Block. It's about 10 years old. You're familiar with it?
Sure, I'm very familiar with Lawrence Block's work.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's going to be a new book in that series called Hit and Run, and I believe it will be published next week, in fact.
Oh, terrific, because I have in my hands Hit List, but I haven't read it yet, which came right after Hitman, I guess.
That's right. And after Hit List, which was Hitman is a novel in stories, it had started off, it's about a hitman named Keller, no first name required. And originally those stories were published in periodicals like Playboy, and then Block put them together in a book format, and it did quite well. So he then followed it up a couple of years later with Hit List as a novel proper. And then a few years later, he wrote another sort of novel in stories called Hit Parade, and now he's about to follow this up with a fourth one because Keller has proved to be quite popular. He's very existential. He goes to a psychiatrist. He adopts a dog. These are things that you wouldn't normally associate with hitmen, but in Block's hands, it works beautifully.
Well, terrific. There are more to look forward to then. Thank you so much.
All right. Well,
you're very welcome.
Thank you for the call. And again, others are certainly welcome to call in and suggest some titles. We're talking this morning about crime and mystery fiction. And here on as I explained at the beginning of the show, and as some people know if they listen, every once in a while we have people on to talk about books, to talk about new books. And they come in and they bring books and they suggest them and they say, here's some things that you might enjoy. And we encourage people to call and do the same thing. And this time around, we thought, well, maybe it would be interesting to do a kind of show, a kind of a book recommendation show, but just concentrate on one particular category. And we said, well, let's talk about mysteries and crime fiction. And our guest this morning is Sarah Weinman. She is a freelance writer. She's based in New York. She writes a crime fiction column for the Baltimore Sun newspaper. She also writes Dark Passages. It's a monthly online mystery and suspense column for the Los Angeles Times Book Review. She's done reviews and articles that have appeared in many print and web publications. She has a blog that's called Confessions of an Idiosyncratic Mind. Interestingly enough, she also has a master's degree in forensic science from John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Did you think at some point that that was something that you might want to do for a career?
That was the plan. Backtrack a little bit, and this can actually be a way to bring up, I ended up freelancing and writing a lot about crime fiction. I studied biology as an undergraduate, and at the time I found myself reading crime fiction sort of as an escape. I mean, there are all these textbooks and heavy reading to do with equations and formulas and the like, and I found that crime fiction was a wonderful escape from schooling. So I got turned on to authors like Robert Crace and Dennis Lehane and Laura Lippman and Harlan Coben, S.J. Rosen and Lee Child. Those are the ones that really stuck out as the authors who I gravitated to the most. And as a result, being a bookish person but not necessarily having a lot of people to talk about this in real life, I went online, I went on the Internet, and I met, virtually at least, like-minded folks who could share my enthusiasm, my love of this genre. And then I had decided after finishing my undergraduate degree that I would pursue a master's degree in forensic science. I was also interested in how the science could be applied to crime. I was very interested in true crime and reading about cases and the like. And I also love New York. It was and still is my favorite city in the world, and I'm lucky as hell to be living here. But when I moved, one of the friends I had online happened to be an owner of a mystery bookshop called Partners in Crime, which is located in the West Village of New York City. And I had dropped her a line and said, I'm going to be moving to New York and pursuing a master's degree. I'd love to work in your bookstore if there are any openings. She said, actually, there are. While I was pursuing my master's degree, I also worked one day a week at Partners in Crime, and it was the best job I ever had, just to have that personal connection between me and the customer, to be able to recommend books, to be able to steer them up to authors who I liked, who I thought they might love. It was just the greatest thing. The other ancillary benefit was that I met a number of people in the publishing world. I met authors. I went to conventions. I networked a little bit more. And then once my master's degree studies were over, I went back to Native Canada. That's where I was from. And in the process of trying to finish up my thesis, I found some time on my hands and being wont to procrastination, I love crime fiction, and I'm starting to read literary blogs, but nobody's covering this genre, so why don't I do it? So early in the morning in October of 2003, I set up a blog and fancifully called it Confessions of an Idiosyncratic Mind for reasons I no longer remember. Otherwise, I'd have a much less complicated title, I suppose. And I sent the link around to a few people, and then over time, more people caught on to it. And it was at a time when blogs are really being paid attention to by the mainstream media. I mean, we look at blogs now, and there's such a proliferation of them. There's such an explosion. It's hard to remember a time when, you know, you could look around, and there were maybe 10 or 15 other literary bloggers, many of whom were starting up at the same time. So there was sort of this little nascent community. But as a result, book review editors were also taking notice. So maybe about three months or so after I had started blogging, I had my very first byline in the Washington Post Book World, and a few months later, I was contacted to write the Baltimore Sun's crime fiction column, and a freelance career was born as a result. So I kind of just followed the brick road, so to speak.
Well, that's great. You know, I'm sure that it's great to have the opportunity to actually to do this and have it be something that you really love to do. You know, not so many people are so lucky to be able to be doing something like that has to do with this thing that they really love. Well, when you were working on your master's degree, how did you manage to either, you know, find time to read for fun or actually get your homework done? Because what you really were wanting to do was to read for fun.
Well, I think one thing that helps, and it certainly has helped me as a reviewer, is I have a little bit of a freakish ability to read fast. I don't think it was quite as pronounced when I was studying, but now it's gotten to the point where I can read about a book a day. And when I tell people that, they look at me agog. But it's just, I've tried to slow down, and that just seems to be my natural reading limit. Now, granted, there are some books that lend themselves to reading slow and others that lend themselves to reading fast. But by and large, that's the only way I can keep up with the genre. And it's also a way for me to read outside of it, because I find that there's so much crime fiction being published, but that in order for me to appreciate the genre, I have to read outside of it, be it literary fiction, mainstream fiction, nonfiction, anything I can get my hands on that looks interesting. So I guess I'm just a voracious bibliophile.
Well, questions are welcome. I have to apologize. I had somebody on hold here, and maybe I made them wait too long. And my fault, my bad. If you want to call back, anybody else who wants to call, we're certainly welcome to have you call in. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. We had a question here from someone off the air who was saying that they had been reading two Irish mystery writers, Declan Hughes and Ken Bruin, and I expect you may well be familiar with them, and wanted to know if you could recommend someone else that would be like that.
Well, it's interesting to bring in Irish crime fiction, because just a few years ago, there were hardly any Irish crime writers. You had John Connolly, who is a best-selling writer, but he writes about America. And you have, although he's not published here, you had Colin Bateman, who's based out of Belfast, Northern Ireland area, who's writing comic crime novels. But in the last few years, and I think that Ken Bruin has in part helped that with a book called The Guards, which is it's sort of the American PI novel transplanted to Galway in Ireland. It has that darkness, but it also has that Irish emotional flavor, and that's developed into a series featuring that PI, Jack Taylor. But as a result, there are a whole host of Irish crime novels, and I would say perhaps maybe not my favorite, but certainly one who I think has already established herself as a rising star is Tana French. What's interesting about Tana is that she's writing what seemed to be police procedural set in Dublin, but the language is so amazing. She also has this wonderful psychological component. She really gets inside the head of her characters and really examines the positive and negative interaction thereof. The first book was called In the Woods, and it came out last year. And interestingly enough, it also won the Edgar Award for Best First Novel by an American Writer, and it's because she happened to have been born in America. So by virtue of being a citizen, she's eligible for this award. But it's also wholly deserved, and the follow-up, which is called The Likeness and will be published by Viking late in July, I've already had a chance to read it, and I think it's a phenomenal book. I think it's even better than In the Woods. So it's a little bit different than what you're expecting with Ken Bruin and also with Declan Hughes, who transplants the work of Ross MacDonald to Ireland. But I think that if this reader really likes those books, they'll probably also like Tana French as well.
All right. Thanks for the recommendation. A little bit past our midpoint here. And we have another caller, someone calling in from Wilmette up in the northern part of the state. And let's go there. Line number four.
Hi. Recommendation. Series of police procedurals by Reginald Hill, British writer. These are they're called PASCO and DL series. A good way to do it. I mean, they're good reading, but there's a spectacular Yorkshire aspect to it and accent. So if you listen to them on books on tape, it's really fun.
I couldn't agree more. I think Reginald Hill's a phenomenal writer. He's only gotten better. His plotting is more complex and dense, but it's those characters, it's Steele and Pasco, who really make those books sing.
Yeah, no, they're great. But try them on tape if you haven't. It's remarkable.
Thank you.
All right. Well, okay, thank you very much. And again, other recommendations are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. That's the toll-free. The first one is for if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are. The other is the toll-free, and we'd be very happy to have any recommendations. You want to tell us about some mystery or crime fiction that you particularly like, you pick up the telephone and give us a call. I think it's really interesting that occasionally it seems like some fiction from some place just suddenly is suddenly there. And the thing that I can think about, and you mentioned it, was crime writing that comes from Scandinavia. It seems like suddenly now we have writers who are originally writing in, I'm not sure if it's Swedish.
Some of them are Swedish. Some are Norwegian. There's even a couple of writers from Iceland now, too.
And that what you just sort of wonder, what, how does that happen that suddenly we there weren't any skin, and they were writing obviously in for their own readership, and they were published in Sweden and Iceland, and maybe they had been published in Europe, I don't know. But how it is that suddenly something is available in English that wasn't available before?
Well, I think with regards to Scandinavian crime fiction, I think what happened is, although there were antecedents in the form of Maj Solwall and Per Wallu, who wrote the Martin Beck's mystery novels. They're Swedish crime writers writing, I think, in the late 60s and early 70s. But you had to fast forward about 20 years when Henning Mankell's work was translated into English. He writes the Inspector Kurt Wallander books, and Faceless Killers came out here, I think, from the Other Press or the New Press. I unfortunately tend to get them confused, which is my mistake. But in any case, they found a very serious following and sold rather well, and additional series installments came out. And as a result of, I think, Mankell's critical success, other publishers thought, well, why don't we import Scandinavian writers as well? So from Sweden, there's now Asa Larsson. From Norway, we have Joe Nesbø and Karen Fossum. And Karen had just won the LA Times Book Prize, in fact, for The Indian Bride, which came out last year. And I think my favorite of all the Scandinavian crime writers is Arnaldur Indridason, and he's from Iceland. And he wrote a book called Jar City, which was just mind-blowing. The language was beautiful. Erlendur, the detective, he was doer, but he also was very thoughtful. He had this very estranged but poignant relationship with his daughter. And it also had to do with genetics in some form or another. And after I read it, I remarked, I think it was on my blog, that this is one of the saddest books I've ever read. And he followed that up with Silence of the Grave, which was even better. And since then, other outstanding books have come out, Voices, and I believe The Draining Lake, which is already out in the UK, is going to be published here in late September. So it's just, and I think part of it is, a lot of it has to do with Indridason himself, but I think we also have to remember that these books are only as good as those people who translate them, and the translators often get neglected. In Indridason's case, his translator was Bernard Scudder, who I think really just knew how to translate Indridason's spare style, but also bring forth the beauty. Unfortunately, last year Scudder died unexpectedly, and it took a while before the news filtered out. But as a result, if there's some question, or at least there was some question as to who would take Scudder's place, and it will be very interesting to see who translates Indridason's work and whether there'll be any differences that we see in terms of reading it in English.
And give me that title again.
The first book in Indridason's series that was translated, it's actually the third book in the series that he wrote, but it was sort of his breakout novel in Scandinavia and Europe. It's called Jar City. And in fact, I believe there is a movie version that just played at a film festival and got some stellar reviews.
Okay, well, that sounds like something that would be interesting to look for. Questions, again, or recommendations from people who are listening, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. And we have a couple of folks here who are ready to go. In Urbana is next, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Last year I read a book by Jocelyn Jackson, which is not a crime novel, but I think it counts as a mystery. And it's told from the point of view of a young woman who thinks that she has killed the high school quarterback.
Is this the Gods in Alabama?
Gods in Alabama, yes.
Yeah, and I know she's followed that up with a couple of other books that you're absolutely right. They don't quite count as crime fiction, but I think they can be enjoyed by mystery readers and people who really like psychological suspense.
Definitely a mystery, and it's definitely an interesting point of view to be told from the perpetrator, the point of view of the supposed perpetrator. Plus the characters and the whole storyline are very, very interesting. A marvelous character development. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And again, we'll go to another caller here. And this, I believe, is someone who is in Champaign. And line number two. Hello.
Yes, is that me?
Yes.
Hi. This goes back to what you were talking about of Scandinavian literature. And the way I understand it, of course, you know, there are 300,000 Icelanders and 8 million Swedes. And so this question about how does their literature get to us is one that I find very interesting. There are 100 million German speakers and readers, and usually what happens is they of course, are very interested in their brothers and sisters in Scandinavian, their literature. It gets translated into German and becomes very popular in Germany and then comes to the United States. And, of course, there are many German publishing companies. I know Bertelsmann owns Random House, for example. And so I think that's, you know, I just wanted to call in and point out that's another way that, you know, very thankfully Scandinavian literature gets to us. And I'm going through my bookcase here. There's an Icelandic woman who is just terrific, and I'm not finding her on my bookshelf. I can't remember her name.
Is that Yrsa Sigurdardóttir?
That's certainly an Icelandic name, but she's also an engineer.
Yes, and so her like command available here is Last Rituals, I believe.
Okay. Well, again, you know, my husband is Icelandic, and so he's got this book. But you know, there, I just wanted to call it and make that point. So thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And
I just want to follow up to what she this caller just said. And Germany is a huge book market. In fact, every October they host the largest trade show in publishing, which is the Frankfurt Book Fair. They upwards of about 250 or 300,000 people all around the world come to this book fair for rights and publishing issues. And Germany fascinates me as a book market. I wish I knew more about it, but I know that there are huge crime fiction fans. Many American authors do astoundingly well over there. So I think that this caller has an excellent point in terms of if it's good enough for Germany that eventually America will take notice as well.
Yeah. It makes me think of a book I was talking earlier about the fact that I do enjoy reading the books that are set in Asia. And
yes,
not very long ago, I read a book by Christopher Moore, who apparently is very popular in Europe. And I think one of the places he is popular is in Germany. He has his character is a detective who lives in Bangkok, whose name is Vincent Calvino. And the book is titled The Risk of Infidelity Index.
Yes, that was a very enjoyable book.
I'm
very, very, very pleased that Christopher Moore, and I just want to clarify for any listeners who might be confused, it's Christopher G. Moore, not the Christopher Moore who writes comedic novels like You Suck, A Love Story, or Bloodsucking Fiends, or Lamb. There are two different guys. But Christopher G. Moore has been writing the Vincent Calvino books for a number of years. He's actually a Canadian who lives overseas. And it's only recently that those books are being made available in America, and I'm very pleased about that.
Yeah, I enjoyed the book, and as I say, they apparently had been available elsewhere and had sold well, and he had done this series. And as far as I know, at least when I read the book, it said that this was the first one that was available in the United States. And it made me wonder, now, how exactly does this happen exactly? How is it that somebody becomes really popular elsewhere? As I'm assuming that his books are written to start out, they're written in English.
That's
How it is that in his particular case, took a long time before they were actually published or this one. I think there actually might be a second one now. Takes this long time that something that was written in English and that had been popular, really sold very well elsewhere, takes this long time before it comes around and is available in the United States.
It's sort of a complicated answer. It has a lot to do with what publishers are looking for at a particular moment, who happened to have been shopping that book at that particular time. An interesting case, and I believe the book's coming out in a couple of weeks as well, is the UK crime writer Martina Cole. Now, crime writer isn't really the right word for her. She writes sort of these gritty novels. It's kind of like The Sopranos in Essex, England, I suppose would be the best log line for her. Mm-hmm. And she's been a perennial bestseller. Every year she writes a book. It hits the top of the UK bestseller list. She sells well in Canada. She sells well in Europe. But for years, the knock against her in terms of selling her books in America was that, oh, they're too provincial. No one would understand these books. They're not going to do well. But finally, Grand Central Publishing in America decided to take a chance, and they're bringing out Close, which was published originally in 2006. And I believe they're doing quite a big push for this as well, to introduce American readers to Martina Cole, to make them understand why she sells so well all around the world. So perhaps there is a bit of an advantage at times to building up this backlist. There's another crime writer whose first book, she's American, but she's been published, again, only in the UK and, I believe, in Europe. And her name is Meg Gardner. And you might know the name because Stephen King highly recommended her work about a year or so ago. And as a result of that interest, publishers suddenly woke up to Meg Gardner's work and bought her new book, which is The Dirty Secrets Club, the standalone novel. And that publisher, Dutton, is also bringing out in paperback format the first five books in her Evan Delaney series. So sometimes it's timing, it's the fickle fortunes, it's a whole host of things that, and it's just a happy coalescence that suddenly makes them available to an American audience.
If you know, sometimes I wonder, you get writers who write a whole series of novels about a particular character, or maybe set in a particular place, and so maybe I'm going in the library and I'm at that section where they have the new books, and I'm sort of strolling through there and looking at something, and you'll pick up something, and this will be in the something or other series. You know, there's a whole series of these books. I don't know. I'm sort of disinclined to jump into a series in the middle, and maybe that's just silly of me. In most of these cases, if you're interested in, say, sampling a writer that you have not read before, and is part of a series, and you know this person has written a number of books, and you know maybe they've written five, and this is the fifth in a series, or it's in the middle somewhere. Do you think that there's anything wrong with jumping in wherever you happen to jump in?
Not wrong at all, and in some cases, oddly enough, the publisher prefers that the reader start with the most recent book. Now, having said that, I'm looking at my own bookcase right now, and I'm looking at The Complete Works of Ian Rankin, which number 19 or 20 books in the Rebus series. Now, I'm going to make a confession. Although I own all of Ian Rankin's books, I've only read a handful, and part of that has to do with what I call not necessarily series fatigue, but I get a little afraid of books where there are so many books in the series, and I feel like, oh, dear, there's 20 books. How am I going to catch up?
Mm-hmm.
In Rankin's case, I've read his first one, Noughts and Crosses, and I read the second one, which I believe is Hide and Seek. And then I had to skip ahead to Black and Blue because I had been told, oh, that's the one where Ian really hits his stride. That's the one where he breaks out. And it was such a phenomenal difference to sort of skip all those books in the interim and go straight to this book where it's clear that he's developed, he's become more mature as a storyteller and as a writer. And I've sort of sampled additional books ever since. And I do want to go back in and perhaps start all the way from the beginning again. But I think it can be very daunting. The other problem, too, is occasionally there'll be series where the first in a series is not available in print. I remember when Lindsay Davis, who writes very funny mysteries set in ancient Rome, for a long time the first few books in her series were out of print. So anyone who wanted to start with the first Marcus Didius Falco book, they would either have to import it or they'd have to hunt around. And it's only recently that those books have come back into print. So it does behoove publishers to make those early series books available for readers, because there are going to be readers who don't just want to start with the most recent one. They want to go back to the beginning. They want to start where it all began. But it's sort of this tricky balance between what fans want, what's best for the author, what's best for the publisher, and the like. And there are no easy answers all the time.
Yeah. So now here, I have to ask you a personal question. You'll have to forgive me now. When you look at your shelf and you have all these Ian Rankin books, do you have them shelved in chronological order?
Not at the moment. because the bookshelves are a little bit in flux.
Oh, okay, okay. I just wondered if you were, you know, one of those people that had to have them in the order in which they came out, or the order in which they come.
I mean, I would love to. It's just I'm looking at the Rankin books, and many of them are mass markets. There's a couple of advanced reader copies and of hardcovers. So because there's sort of this mix of formats, it can be hard to align them. But near them are the reissued George Simenon novels that Penguin put out in very lovely small trade paperback editions. Mm-hmm. And those are in the order that they were published, although not necessarily the order in which they were reissued. And they look very cute together, I must say.
A woman after my own heart. There you go. We're coming down to the point where we have maybe about 4 or 5 minutes left. And if somebody wants to call in here, get in real quick, you can certainly do that. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. For you, are there particular, now it sounds like you have very, very widely read in this genre. Are there particular things, though, that you like, a particular kind of story, a character that you really like more than anything else?
I do tend, like you, to gravitate more towards the dark side of the street. I don't think it's an accident that the column that I write for the LA Times is called Dark Passages, which was named after David Goodis' book, and Goodis is one of many noir writers who I'm very fond of. That said, I do want to make a couple of more traditionally minded recommendations, one a classic novelist and one a contemporary novelist. The classic novelist is a woman who wrote under the pseudonym of Josephine Tay. Her real name was Elizabeth McIntosh, but when she wrote her mystery novel, she used the pseudonym, and she wrote absolutely wonderful mysteries that are superbly plotted, that are beautifully written, that are ingenious. There's one book she wrote called The Daughter of Time, where the detective, Scotland Yard Inspector Alan Grant, he's laid up. He doesn't go anywhere. He doesn't leave his bed. But even from his bed, with the help of his friend and with the help of books he uses for research, he tries to solve the mystery of whether Richard III actually killed the two princes in the tower. And he comes up with a solution that is both ingenious and yet perfectly obvious, that you just want to slap your forehead and go, why didn't I think of that? In that vein, and I don't think it's an accident that this author was influenced by Tay, is a Canadian writer named Louise Penny. And she wrote a book called Still Life, which is set in the eastern townships near Montreal, Canada, a very small town. And they sort of have this feeling of village mystery, but they also have a real contemporary spin. And they have a Quebec-based detective named Arnold Gamache, who... he's, you know, warm and funny, but also cantankerous, and they're wonderful books.
All right. Somebody here was suggesting for people who were maybe thinking about, because of the Olympics or otherwise, were interested in novels set in China, and did make one recommendation, and I think certainly if people have never read Robert Van Gulik, who was a Dutch writer who wrote in the 1920s, maybe? He wrote
the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, I believe.
The series of stories about a judge named Judge D, who was operating in ancient China.
That's right.
So that it can be pretty entertaining, and he wrote a lot of these stories. There are lots of them. So that's from the listener. That's one suggestion. But also, person was wondering if you had anything that you might like to suggest that was Chinese.
There is a St. Louis-based writer that he was born and raised in China named Chu Xiaolong, and excuse me if I'm mispronouncing his name. He's written a number of books that are set in China with a series detective named Inspector Chen. The first book, I believe, is Death of a Red Heroine, and the most recent one was Red Mandarin Dress. There's also a brand new mystery series that just got started. The first one was published here in February by Diane Wei Liang. And unfortunately, the title seems to elude me.
This is the one that's, and the character is a woman.
Right? Yes.
And it's called White Jade Eyes?
The Eye of Jade.
Eye of Jade, right. Yes.
Yes, and it stars a newly minted private investigator, the first female PI in China. It's dubbed as named Mei Wang. And that was, I must say, I was very impressed with that book. She writes very well, but it's also a window into the China not too long after Tiananmen Square, where it's the culture's changing. There's this clash between modern values and Mao communist values, and I'm very much looking forward to see what she comes up with next.
Yeah, and that's and obviously now there are many more books that are mystery and crime fiction that are either that are written by women and that have women characters, women lead characters. But this would be another one if you're looking for something where the your central character is a woman, that that would be an interesting choice, both for that and also for this thing that we were talking about earlier, that it can actually can give you the feeling that you're getting a window into another time, another place.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're just about at the point where we're going to have to stop. I again want to say, if you're interested in recommendations for books, you might want to look at Sarah Weinman's blog, Confessions of an Idiosyncratic Mind, or you can read her, I think you probably can read her column online for the Baltimore Sun, Dark Passages, and also she does a monthly online mystery and suspense column for the LA Times Book Review, and I'm guessing that both of those should be things that you could read online.
Yes, they are. And what I would say is to, if you want to find me at Confessions of an Idiosyncratic Mind, it's very easy to remember the URL. It's www.sarahweinman.com. It's just my name, but that's Sarah with an H. Some people forget that.
And that's W-E-I-N-M-A-N, Sarah Weinman.
That's correct. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you giving some of your time. It's been a lot of fun. And any last thing that you might like to, what are you reading right now?
I'm actually reading a book that is not published in the U.S., and my understanding is it won't be published for a little bit. But oddly enough, it's set in Boston, and it's the second in a series. And the author is Chris Mooney. The first book is called The Missing, and this one is called The Secret Friend. And it's coming out in the U.K. Next month, and I'm very hopeful that it will find a home with a U.S. publisher quite soon.
All right. Well, Sarah Weinman, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I can't believe how quickly the time went by.
All right. It happens when you have managed to have a good time.
Absolutely.
Thanks.